Well, the world is a dumpster fire. Nothing here makes sense. And you vacillate between crippling fear and constant self-defense. And nothing's right and nothing's good. And you're paralyzed with grief. Don't kill yourself, just have a cup of coffee.
Welcome to Coffee Over Suicide, the dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. I'm your host, Chris Parker Howard. And I got a doctor's appointment tomorrow to check on the medication situation, see how it's going, seeing if my mental state is where it needs to be. I'm honestly not entirely sure. I've spent so much time not being able to trust whether or not I was functioning properly or correctly, that I'm a little mistrustful of the fact that things seem to be going okay. Is that paranoid? Is that something I should be paranoid about? Is anybody else having questions about their medication making them feel like maybe not themselves, or, you know, even a better version of yourself? Because I'm getting some of that now. But how much of that is real? And honestly, if it's not real, what does it matter if it's working? I don't know. I'm having a lot of thoughts about this. And, you know, I get obsessive about things and I worry them to the bone. If you're also having a situation like this, I'd like to talk to you about it. You can hit me up, info@coffeeoversuicide.com. But until then, guess what, everybody? We are very, very close to the one-year mark of this little old podcast. And, you know, a lot of podcasts fold after they get about 20 episodes in because it gets hard. You start having to actually do some work. You got to start reaching out to people you don't know and seeing if they're willing to talk, and especially in the case of what I'm doing here, it can sometimes be a little difficult. I've reached out to a couple of people and have had them say, okay, so you're doing a mental illness podcast. Why do you want to talk to me? And they get a little offended. But the thing is, even if you yourself don't have a mental illness, and I've talked to a few people on this show that don't, the odds are really good that you know someone who has, or that you at least have questions or an opinion. Honestly, I think what makes a good person for me to talk to is anyone who wants to talk. I feel like we could have a great conversation. Am I wrong about that? I think that it's something that we all are talking about more and more. And lending a voice to people, giving people a space where they're safe to ask questions and try to figure it out, or, you know, even be wrong, just dead wrong about their opinions on things, I think it's helpful. It's helpful to the whole overall conversation. And I'm glad that you've all stuck with me throughout all of this, because this has been the greatest time of my life. I'm enjoying the hell out of this. And I don't know how to enjoy things very well. I've got a couple of high-profile gigs coming up with my band, and I don't know how to enjoy it. There's a part of me that's just worrying about it. You know, kind of an anxiety, but there's an excitement too. I don't know. I don't know how to just take things and let them be good. And I'm working on that. If you have suggestions for me on that front, I'm really open to suggestions on that. But today on the show, Sharon Borick is here of the band Sharon. And we didn't know each other before she came in and sat down and we had this conversation. But it felt like we had known each other a long time once we got into the conversation, because everything we were talking about was so familiar. Talking about being on the road with a band, trying to, you know, break even, make a little money, going to interesting places, and just traveling around with a bunch of people in a van trying to make music. That really speaks to me on a lot of levels. And the other thing that we really got into was this idea that it's your responsibility when you know that you've got darkness and sadness in you to do something with that in order to keep yourself alive. And the best thing you can do is make some art. But we get into all that. So, without further ado, here's my conversation with Sharon Bork. So there's headphones if you want them.
Cool. Do you think I need them?
No.
Okay.
Probably not. Just keep the microphone sort of around the front of your face.
Okay.
And then that's it.
Cool.
And we're going.
Awesome.
Hi. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Not bad. Not bad. I've discovered that I have allergies, which is new for me.
That's not fun. Allergies to what?
Yeah, I don't know. Because I've never had allergies before. But I know that... I know that I have them, and so whatever is going on right now with the plants and everything is...
Around springtime is normally when a lot of people's allergies start acting up, all the pollen and everything.
It's just the worst. And then on top of it all, I started a round of medication pretty recently after not being on medication forever and ever and just kind of, you know, coping and whatnot. And then things got really dark. And I was like, okay, maybe a life preserver for a little while.
Yeah.
So I started a round of medication. And, of course, that comes with lots of fun side effects.
Right.
And among them, weight gain, which makes exercise harder. And now I can't breathe because of the allergies. And I'm feeling really out of sorts.
You know, you would think that antidepressants give you motivation to do things like exercise. But a lot of times I have found that... when you are not on the exactly correct medication for your body and brain, it tends to mess with you quite a bit.
Yeah. Oh, it really can.
Yeah.
So, what is your experience with medication? Have you...
I've been on and off different medications, from anti-anxiety, antidepressants, just so many different ones. My absolute worst experience was Zoloft. That was the first one I ever took.
Oh, my God. That's a lot of people's worst experience.
It was so awful. But I've been on Wellbutrin most recently, and that one's been really nice.
Yeah. Wellbutrin's good because, I mean, my experience with Wellbutrin was pretty solid because it was very mild.
Yeah.
It doesn't – you don't feel like you're on something, which is awesome because a lot of medications, you're really aware that something is – rewiring you, it almost feels like. It's
definitely
terrible. I mean, Prozac was a nightmare.
I think I did Prozac for a little bit as well and did not have much fun with it.
Yeah. Most people don't have a lot of fun with it. I mean, if you're taking it in the first place, you're probably not having a lot of fun.
That is a very good point.
So let's go back just a little bit and try to work our way forward to that. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Denver.
Yeah, right here.
Yeah. I was born in Israel, actually.
Nice.
But I moved out here when I was 6 years old and have been here ever since.
So you probably don't have a lot of memories of Israel.
Just a little bit. I remember what my apartment looked like that I lived in very vaguely. And I remember what the school that I went, the kindergarten that I went to looked like. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah. So growing up in Denver, I mean, what kind of kid were you?
I had an abundance of phases. I was in school, I was always very awkward. I tried to be social and be friends with people, but it didn't work out the majority of the time.
Yeah.
I was one of those people that always had very few really close friends rather than just being friends with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But I went from being just, you know, a little girl to being I had like a really emo phase when I was like 13. Like I cut my, like I gave myself bangs and had hair all in my face and wore black all the time. And then I had this weird phase where I just like was all about like highlighter colors and wore like neon green all the time. And then I got into like a weird hippie phase. I had dreads for a while.
Yeah.
And
just
then,
trying on different personalities
pretty
to
much.
See which one's going to fit.
Yeah. And then I discovered like punk rock and metal and that pretty much stuck with me.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. That's always, I mean, those are my favorite stories. It's the, because it's, you never hear someone who says, you know, and then I heard popular music on the radio and
right.
it just defined me. You never hear those stories, but...
I gotta say, though, I did grow up really loving, and I still do love her very much, Pink.
Yeah.
She's an artist that just her story and her attitude about everything is so punk rock, despite the type of music that she makes.
Well,
and
she's totally punk. I would argue that with anybody. I mean, she's got a Wendy O. Williams kind of vibe,
absolutely.
You know? It's interesting the way that, you know, the whole punk rock thing has been co-opted into... a brand anymore. And it used to be such a wide variety of things. It was so disparate. It was just a big fuck you to being confined into a space.
I'm really glad that you said fuck you because I wasn't sure if we were like allowed to say bad words on this or not. And
oh, yeah.
I've been like restricting myself.
No,
so.
Definitely.
Cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, you discover who were your first bands? You know, when you were like, oh my God, I found this.
Yeah, I will never, ever be ashamed, no matter what anybody else says about them, the fact that Evanescence inspired me to not only create music, but to start a rock band.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, everyone thinks, you know, they hear Evanescence and they think Bring Me to Life and My Immortal, the two radio bangers.
Yeah, yeah.
And my issue with that is, you know, the two songs that you know by a band that are played on the radio do not define the band.
Right.
And I personally, those are my two least favorite songs from Evanescence.
Mm-hmm.
They have so much more incredible, heavy, dark, really personal, beautiful, poetic material that's just so incredibly orchestrated and real, like... The lyrics and the vocals and the piano and, you know, the guitars and everything in that band is just something that I admire so much.
Yeah.
And, you know, Amy Lee as a human is just wonderful. I've never met her, but I've, you know, read so much about her and watched interviews of her. And she's just such, like, a bright, optimistic person, which is so weird because of the music that she makes. But
yeah. Well, but that's – I tend to find that with a lot of people who are into the darker music. It's about expressing something.
Definitely.
You know, the way to explain it to people that I've found works the best is to say, you know, it's the blues.
Right.
That's what it is. It's basically just we're gonna express this thing, and we've been through it, and we live through it, and now or here's this emotional puzzle that I'm trying to solve, and this is my way of getting through it and getting out the other side of it, or celebrating living through something really awful.
Exactly, and that's exactly what my music is. I write about things that I experience and things that I feel and things that. I really, really want to talk about and vocalize and tell other people about, but I can't for one reason or another. And that's why it ends up in my music.
Yeah.
That's how I express myself.
So when did you first decide singing was going to be the thing?
There was never, you know, I hear a lot of these kinds of stories from a lot of different artists who had this like aha moment.
Yeah.
And I never really had that. I took piano lessons for a few years when I was a kid. And, you know, I did like classical lessons and I learned how to play classical music and learned how to read music and everything. And I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I just kind of fell out of wanting to play classical. And that's kind of why I stopped taking lessons. I just wasn't really having much fun with it anymore. I just wanted to do my own thing. And I started messing around on the piano and writing songs. I wrote my first song when I was like 8 years old.
Nice.
It was awful. but I always really enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun singing. I didn't sing very well when I was young, but I've been singing for, you know, 12, 13 years now. And I've kind of found my voice and what I want to do with it. And, you know, the most recent single that I released is finally the kind of music that I've always wanted to make with piano and strings and
yeah.
harmonies and just really heavy guitars and really full and big and powerful.
Right.
But still very full of emotion.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's almost, you know, operatic in a lot of ways, theatrical in a sense. And, you know, that's not a pejorative. I mean, I think that's great when music has, you know, such a larger than life. You know, I don't know how to explain it, but you know, when you add all of those elements, it just seems to make it so much bigger.
Right.
It really swells it to the edges of what it's doing, and kind of insists that you feel it a certain way. You know, you have no choice when you hear it. You know, like that's why minor chords work so well. It's they just hit you right in the back of the neck, and you don't have a choice. The hairs are going to go up, and that's what it is. You're powerless to it, and it's kind of amazing.
Music is very powerful.
Yeah,
that's true.
So when did the darkness first visit you?
I had a lot of really life-altering experiences as a child that some am very open and vocal about, others will never breathe a word of.
Yeah.
And they, you know, all of them impacted me in a certain way. And listening to things like, I mean, it was when I first heard my first Evanescence song that I was like, yeah, this is me. Like, I feel this. So, like, I think I started crying. Like,
yeah.
And I was overwhelmed with how okay it was to be so vocal and open about feeling so down and so dark. And I love that, you know, and that band really changed my life because I was, you know, it showed me that you're able to talk about this stuff. You're able to write this way. You're able to sing this way. And, you know, when I started listening to metal, I just fell fully submerged into it.
Like it was just something that was in you.
Yeah.
And then this...
It just took me a minute to find it.
Yeah.
Because I grew up listening to, like, Celine Dion mm-hmm. and...
Oh, yeah.
Christina Aguilera. And,
of course.
You know, yeah. I loved their vocals and their lyrics and the way that they wrote. And when I discovered, you know, just, like, heavier, fuller music with different structure...
Yeah. I mean, everybody's kind of a product of what they're raised with.
Definitely.
And so, I mean, I remember there are elements of pop music that still find their way
absolutely.
Into
and in
the
my
heavy
music,
stuff.
In
yeah.
my music as well, because I'm so comfortable with the structure of pop music that you'll find that in the majority of my songs, it's very like, you know, there's a verse and there's a chorus.
Yeah, yeah.
And those will come and find themselves coming back throughout the song. And but also playing with other people and playing with people like, you know, my drummer who listens to such obscure music, you know, it kind of forces you to write a little bit differently than what you're used to and step out mm-hmm. of your comfort zone.
Yeah.
And that's cool. And I really like the challenge. And I think that's been my favorite part of playing with other people is it's forced me to step out of my box of
yeah.
songwriting and write differently. And I've been throwing in different weird sections into different songs that are in a different key or in a different time signature, just completely out of the blue and throw them into a song and find a way to make it fit. And it's been really fun.
Yeah. Yeah, those things are great. The way that having to commune with other people and find a way to make something work, the best experience that I think a lot of people could ever have is be in a band with different personalities.
Yeah.
It'll teach you how to get along with the world because, I mean, I was the band that I was in for the longest, there were times where we just – hated each other, but we would hit the stage and everything was good. I mean, we were all there for a common goal and, you know, you can work past it. So it's almost like you become family in a sense.
I've always found, you know, as long as music is so powerful and when you're playing it with other people, you're forced to be connected to those people. And as long as you do have the same end goal in mind, that's really all that matters. And I used to have a band and play as like Sharon in the Wind
mm-hmm.
because I wanted that.
Yeah.
And never really did find it, which is why I just kind of gave up the idea of the wind. It was just not working out and didn't really want to put myself through trying to make it work any longer.
Yeah.
But, you know, my bassist and my drummer, they've been playing with me for 2 years now, and they are the people that I have found that with who do have the same end goal as I do. And we, you know, they're my best friends. I date my drummer, and my bassist is my absolute best friend in the world. And it's so nice to have that support system, not only as people in your life, but as people you play music with and create with and go on tour with and
yeah.
play these really cool shows with. It's such a special connection.
Well, and the thing that's good actually in a lot of ways about, you know, being with another artist is that they get your struggle. They understand exactly what it is you're going through because they're going through it too.
Right.
And that, that thing of needing your time away and that, you know, all of the complications that come with being a person with that kind of mindset of taking things a little outside of the box and taking the world kind of your own way with your own terms, it finds its way into every aspect of your personality. And that can be strange to people who don't live that way. It can be tough. So, I mean, in that regard, when you first started to experience the feelings of depression and, you know, something's just not okay, what was your support network like?
I didn't have one.
No?
I didn't really want to talk to any friends about it. I think mostly because when I first started, you know, experiencing depression, I didn't have like a really close friend.
Yeah.
That I felt comfortable enough to talk to about it. And my family never understood it. I am the first person in my family who's ever had a mental illness, and they were so confused. They did not know what to do.
Yeah.
I was sporadic and just my mood swings were out of control, and I didn't know what was going on, and they had no idea what to do, you know? It was a big shock to my family for sure.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I started experiencing it when I was, I think, 13 or 14 years old and was diagnosed with a million different things, including depression, anxiety, and unidentified mood disorder, quote unquote, when I was 15.
Oh, wow.
So I grew up with it, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, I was a teenager when it hit me, too. And, you know, it was around the 90s, and so it was just kind of making its way into the mainstream, and so there were more people kind of aware that it was a bigger deal than people thought it was. It's like one in four.
Right.
And so, you know, my folks didn't really know what to do with it, but they were kind of prepared. They at least knew what it was. They didn't understand how I got it or where it came from or anything, because I'm bipolar, and so that's a lot of fun. At least I have the kind that is kind of fun sometimes. It's the bipolar one where, you know, you wake up one morning and you think you're Jesus, and the world is the brightest colors you can imagine. and then that goes away, and you're sitting in a pile of yourself. And it's just a black hole that just sucks at you. And I experienced a lot of this when I was really little and didn't know what it was. I mean, how do you handle things like that? Because you're kind of taught very basic concepts of happiness and sadness, but they're given a cause and effect. But when depression hits, it doesn't care if you should be happy. Right. I mean, is that what you found as well?
Absolutely. And I find the one thing that a lot of people who don't struggle with it, don't realize about depression, is it's not a perspective. It's not how you look at things. It's not a choice.
Yeah.
Just when it comes down to it. And I think that's a lot of the misunderstanding when it comes to mental illness in general, is you don't have a choice in it.
Yeah.
No matter what it is that's going on in your life, no matter your career is good, your relationships are good, you know, your body's good, you're exercising. It doesn't matter what it is that you're doing or what's going on in your life. It's something that lives in your brain and in your body, and it just has this control over you, and you can't do anything about it. You can take every medication in the world to stabilize it, but it doesn't make it go away, and you don't have a choice in it. And it's very difficult to live with, you know, especially if it's not medicated and if it's not controlled. And I've been on and off of meds for years, and I haven't been taking them for the last few months. And, you know, because
just coping.
Because of, you know, insurance bullshit that I, you know, and it's, you know, you gotta, it takes a lot out of you to handle it on your own.
Yes.
It's really difficult. And I really feel for people with mental illness because I've not only struggled with it personally, but I've had multiple friends lose their lives to it.
Yeah.
And that's very hard, and I get it. And I feel very lucky that I've, you know, been able to do my best with it because I know a lot of people who weren't able to, and it's very sad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is a difficult thing to wrap your head around. I mean, it's like trying to walk off a broken leg. Right. I mean, you might be able to stumble through it while it heals, but if you're not taking proper care of it, it's not going to heal right, and it's going to hurt you forever.
Absolutely.
And mental illness is the same way. You have to kind of get to know yourself really good, because when it hits you, you almost have to be a little bit mistrustful of your own emotions because you're not sure if they're being delivered to you correctly. At least that's what I found. It's like, is this darkness real? Or, you know, is it the illusion that my brain is feeding me right now? And I guess I got to get up and go to fucking work anyway.
Right.
So.
And when you're an adult, you don't really have a choice in it. You can't call in and be like, yeah, I don't think I can make it to work today. I have depression.
Yeah.
Because unless you have a boss who really gets that, which is rare, they're going to be like, come into work.
Yeah.
Or you don't have a job anymore. What? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
And it's so difficult.
Game of Thrones made me sad too. Come to work. It's not the same
fucking
thing.
Right. It's not like that. It's just a continuous just exhaustion and like cloud. And you got to fight it, you know? Yeah.
It affects you physically. It really can get in your bones.
Yeah.
I mean, you feel heavier, like you're in a swimming pool trying to run. You know, it's really bizarre the ways that your brain can hijack everything around you. And I mean, your brain is the thing you rely on to tell you the truth. And if you can't rely on your own brain to tell you the truth, what are we doing? It's a weird existence. And trying to get people to understand that through people sharing their experiences is exactly what I'm trying to do here. People just talking about it. Because eventually, much like hearing the right song, you know, you hear music over and over again. But then one song just – it's like they can say the exact same words in a different way. And now you heard it. Now it makes sense. Now it touched you. I think that's what conversations like this are good for.
Is to
hit that person who needed to hear it, because it's absolutely insane. I think depression can be just absolutely ridiculous. It's
a monster.
Yeah, and you carry it around with you.
Right.
So, I mean, without having a history of this in your family and without having, you know, people in your life who have understood this, how do you go from recognizing that something was off to getting help for the first time?
I had a conversation with my mother when I was 14. She took me to a couple different psychologists, shrinks, space, just to like talk. I hated every single one of them. They were awful.
Yeah.
I don't think they got it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I finally found one who I was with for multiple years. And there came a time where everything just got so bad and she could recognize it. She saw it. It wasn't about the things I was saying. She could see it on my face. And when depression gets really bad, it does affect you physically in the way that you look. It takes your sleep away from you. And, you know, I also have, you know, mania in my diagnosis, and there were nights where I was up all night, you know, either writing or coloring or what, just not being able to sleep, you know?
Yeah. Oh, believe me, I got that one.
I was just out of it, and she could see it in my face, and I told her that I was not down for life anymore, basically, and I went to the ER and voluntarily put myself into the what's it called? Intensive care unit.
Yeah.
I think I was in there for like 2 weeks before I was finally like, man, I want to go home. This is stupid. While I was in there too, because that was the time that I was put on Zoloft and they doubled my dosage while I was in there. And when I got out, it got even worse.
This isn't working. Let's double down on it.
Right, exactly.
See if it doesn't work spectacularly.
Well, it was around Christmas time that I was in there too, so there was no consistent doctor there.
Man, depression around Christmas, the fucking worst.
It was awful. So, yeah, I mean, I eventually ended up getting off of Zoloft, and that helped a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're off the medication now.
Yeah.
How's that going?
I'm trying. I have been off the medication for multiple months now. We have this insurance that the psychiatrist that I was going to stopped accepting, so I haven't found a new one in order to get it refilled.
Right.
So I've been just kind of having to deal with it. And some days it's fine. Other days it blows.
Yeah.
Everything, dropping the band and everything and that kind of going to shit. And I've really had to try on my own to just be fine with everything that's been going on. It's been really stressful. It's been really heartbreaking and really difficult. But I have been writing a lot of music. So that's kind of been my coping mechanism, as it has been since I was a child, you know. So that's kind of my one little support is songwriting.
Yeah.
And playing music live. Because as soon as I get on stage, I'm fine.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how I'm feeling. It doesn't matter what's going on that day. You know, as soon as I'm playing music, I'm good.
Well, it's a dopamine rush.
Yeah.
It just takes everything away. It's like it's like taking a Xanax.
It really is. You know, but it's all natural.
The anxiety's just gone.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, if only you could do that more often.
Right.
Yeah, that's the healthiest thing you could possibly do is you know, not to marginalize it, but that idea of, you know, taking lemons and making lemonade, you know, it is kind of that, but that's a conscious choice to do something about it and to try to find your way out the other side of it. Versus just giving in and saying, fuck it.
And I'm really glad that I discovered music and playing music and that songwriting has become who I am as a human. Because I can honestly say, like, music saved my life. It really did. And I am so, so grateful that I found, you know, a stage in Denver as well and a platform to and resources to create music and put out albums and music videos and play shows and go on tours, because I couldn't see myself doing anything else.
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing too. I mean, because you tour, and so with touring, you've got to be mentally agile.
Yeah.
But the other thing that's kind of good about it, even though a DIY tour is probably one of the hardest things a person could do.
It's exhausting.
Yeah, it's very exhausting. But, you know, it's like they say exercise and running is a natural antidepressant. In a lot of ways it is, but, you know, in some ways it's that thing of keeping yourself busy and on your toes. Right. Even when you're putting yourself in a situation that can create anxiety, if you have shit that you've got to figure out, in spite of your anxiety, in spite of your depression, you know, it's like, well, we've got to be in Oklahoma tomorrow, so I guess we're driving, whether right. I feel like driving or not.
You know, and I don't want to talk shit or anything. You know, one of the members that went on the very first tour I ever went on last year had a complete mental breakdown halfway through, and we couldn't finish out the tour because of it. Mm-hmm. And that's just, you can't let that kind of thing ruin a tour like that. You know, you've got to suck it up, and you got to do your best, and you have to keep doing it.
Yeah. I mean, because you're responsible now.
Right.
And you're responsible for more than just yourself.
Right.
And to be able to overcome yourself in spite of yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, that alone can save your life. Those tools right there can really stop you from killing yourself.
Absolutely.
I mean, I honestly think about all of the shots that I had in my younger days as a musician, and how they fell through for one reason or another. And man, I think that person probably would have been a breakdown person. That person would have died. That person probably would have really enjoyed a lot of drugs. And it would have been a real problem. And here I am now, and I still get to play music, and that's great.
That's wonderful.
I still write, although, you know, most of it goes nowhere. I'm happy to hear it, and then...
Right. You know, when you're a songwriter, it doesn't matter if it goes anywhere. It's
yeah.
just something that you do. It's a part of who you are, and you can't help but write. You can't help but create when you're
yeah.
an artist, you know?
Yeah.
It's just how you're wired.
Exactly. It's going to come out of you.
Right.
And a lot of times just getting it... I mean, I think that there are different types of creatives. And a lot of the songwriters I know, as far as like that being their output, is I'm a songwriter. You're not always necessarily also a performer on that equal level.
That's true.
Sometimes it's just, I need to get this out so that I can hear it. And then once I hear it, I'm fine.
And I respect that. I know a lot of songwriters who are like that. I know a lot of artists and painters who are like that, who just do it for themselves because they have to, because
yeah.
that's how they deal with life, and that's just the nature of
Yeah, not
them.
Everybody can be a business person.
Right, because it is very hard. It's one thing. I loved being in my room playing piano, writing songs, writing lyrics in my notebook, and writing out notes on staff paper, and creating songs on my own, and recording them in the voice memos on my phone, and just leaving them there.
Yeah.
That was great. I now, in doing what I do, have created a business, and it's, you know, it doesn't really make me enough money to sustain my life. So
right.
I have my full-time job during the day that makes me money to pay my bills and pay for everything that I'm doing with music, because it adds up. It's very expensive.
Yeah.
But then I'm also working like another full-time job running this business that's just my art. You
yeah.
know? It's so much work, and it's very exhausting. It takes away your free time, your social life, your sleep.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's worth it.
Yeah.
It's so worth it.
It is.
It's not even just for me, you know. There came a point where, like, a switch flipped in my brain where I realized that I was at a place in my life where I had experienced so much stuff and finally had a way to bring it to life musically through art, through creation, and share it with other people and help other people in a way by doing so. And that's one of my main goals with my music, is the same way that, you know, bands that I grew up listening to changed my life. I want my music to make people be unafraid to feel and unafraid of the things going on inside of them and in their heads, and give them the freedom to do what it is they want to do with their lives, whether it's creating or starting a business or traveling or whatever it is, like, I don't know.
Yeah. No, I completely get it. I mean, there's nothing more powerful than hearing from someone that it's okay
to not be okay.
Yeah, it's okay to not be okay. Yeah. It's important to hear that from people, especially artists and musicians and, you know, the people who are enriching your life, to really get that, no, I see you.
Yeah.
And I get it. And to know that, yeah, they get it. They completely get it. But to also have that idea that not only is it okay to not be okay, but there's something really badass about being able to say out loud, I'm not okay, and I'm managing it. I'm dealing with it. Or even if it's, you know, I'm not dealing with it today.
And those are the days that either I write my favorite songs I've ever written,
yeah,
or the days that I sleep all day and I'm like, man, I really want to write, but like, I don't want to get out of bed.
Yeah.
You know, and it goes
on. It's important to have those days and
right,
to give that silence to yourself. It's very important.
Yeah.
That's a thing that I had to learn the hard way, because I'm very hyperactive. So coffee's probably a bad idea, but
you know, I'm very similar. I really had to, you know, when I first started the band and started playing with, you know, the wind and really making it a real thing, I just went full force at it from day one.
Yeah.
And never really let myself have time to stop and take a break. And I had a really awful, awful first lineup. It was miserable. And after that, I was like, okay, got to find new people, got to keep doing it. It doesn't matter. Like, got to keep going. Like, can't slow down, you know? And that was exhausting. It was really mentally and physically exhausting. I wasn't getting any sleep, and I was tired and I was sad, and I needed to let myself take a break to deal with what I had gone through and what happened, and I had to deal with being upset and deal with being depressed and deal with my emotions, and I didn't let myself do that, and that was a mistake. And I'm glad that I finally said to myself, this happened and it sucks, and I'm going to take a break for a little bit and just chill and make some music and play some shows, and once I'm okay again, I can keep going,
yeah,
you know? And it was the best decision I could have possibly made to let go of the concept of the wind, because that was the biggest thing, because I wanted it so bad to be an actual band, and it wasn't happening, wasn't working out, and letting it go was the best decision I could have made for myself.
Yeah.
And I just feel so much better and freer, and just like, I feel like I can breathe, you know? Yeah. And
what do you think you were worried about with the idea of slowing down or taking a break, or even letting go of, this previous identity?
Yeah. I didn't play. I'm in a family of very conservative people who believe very much in, you go to school, you go to college, and you get a desk job, and you sit at a desk, and
yes,
you just make money, because you just got to make money. You got to figure out something in your life that makes you money. You know, my mom was a nurse. My dad's in construction. He's like a construction manager.
Yeah.
And they very much believe in education and finding a career that will make you money.
Yeah.
And I was standing there my entire life growing up, and I was like, I'm an artist, okay? I have to make music, and I want to perform it, and that's just what I'm going to do. And they didn't like that very much. I didn't play my first show even until I was, I think, 15. And that was when that was right after I got out of the hospital. And I had a friend of mine who knew that was just all I cared about and all I wanted. And I don't know if you know Aaron Say. He runs Seven Circle Music Collective.
Seven Circle is awesome.
Yeah. So that was where I played my very first show. That friend of mine sent a message to Aaron and said, hey, I have this friend and she plays piano and sings and she just needs to be on stage, dude. Like, do you have a show that she could play on? And that was how I played my first show. I think it was March 2014.
Nice.
And that was my favorite thing ever. It was so cool. There was like maybe 7 people there. But
yeah,
it was great. I had so much fun. And as soon as I started the band was when I really started pushing things hard because I really wanted to make something happen. And I felt like I had started so late compared to other local artists that I was around. And that thought of being behind scared me more than anything.
Yeah.
And that's why I just pushed it at full force and never let myself slow down. And I was so wrong because, you know, I just turned 21. I've been on 3 tours. I've played at some of my favorite venues in Denver and opened for multiple national artists. And, you know, sitting down and thinking through all of that is, it's great because, yeah, I've worked really hard, but I've also accomplished so much at a young age. And, you know, I think it's okay to let myself just, you know, take a break when I need it now.
Yeah. Well, and also to give yourself the ability to fuck things up once in a while.
Right.
Because you have to be able to give yourself the option to recover from mistakes.
Absolutely. And I've made so many mistakes. So many. I've, you know, having this I have to make stuff happen and I have to make stuff happen right now mindset for so long has made me kind of an asshole in a lot of ways. But you know, I know that I'm not a bad person, and I know what it is that I care about, and I know why I've done the things that I've done, not all of which I'm proud of.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's okay. And I'm at a place where I can say, you know, it's okay. I just gotta be considerate, and I gotta think about what's happening around me and the way that I'm taking it. And I have to remember what's important to me, but I also have to remember that there are other things that are important to me as well. And I care about my friends, and I care about my family and other artists who I see in the scene. And I want to not only create music and tour and travel and make art, but I want to be a friend.
Yeah.
And that's very important to me as well. And I think that was the biggest thing that I learned from The Wind, is that was the biggest thing that it taught me, is it's important to not only be, you know, a businesswoman and have that mindset of I gotta make stuff happen right now, but to also be a friend.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's also one of the harder things to do is to take a step back and take a deep breath and recognize where you are in your journey toward becoming a complete human being. Right. It's not something that has an end goal. It just keeps going, you know, until you're gone. You just do the best you can with it. It's not something that you can just fix. You're going to change and grow and learn as you move through your various phases.
Yeah.
And to allow yourself to do that and to step back and say, oh, yeah, I'm not doing this right now. I'm going to take a break. And
come back to it.
And come back to it and to recognize
and that's so important.
You're not going to disappear. You're not going to turn to dust and be forgotten if you leave for a week. And that's the scariest thing when you're in the throes of it.
It took me so long to learn that because it's, you know, I've made it one of those things that every day I'm doing something for the music, for the band, for... And it's fine if I want to take a day off. Mm-hmm. It took me so long to learn that it's fine if I want to just take a break for a little bit and figure out what's going on, take a step back, look at it from an outside perspective, and try it in a different way.
Yeah.
I am very glad that I learned at a young age that it's okay to just slow down for a little bit.
Yeah.
You know?
It's important.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't learn that. I don't know if I've learned that. It's something I'm still trying to figure out. It's something I've never been good at, and I'm just now coming around to it. I think maybe even in the last 6 months, I've discovered some things because I had spent the last 15 years just running on coping mechanisms and, you know, voraciously trying to digest every bit of self-examination and knowledge that I could get my hands on and just, you know, turning inward and trying to rip out all the bad wiring, you know, just years and years of it. And then I realized that in that process, I had put a lot of defenses in place that weren't necessarily healthy, but seemed at the time to be helping me.
Right.
Because you don't always know. And then I got on a medication for the first time in 15 years, and suddenly my emotions seemed to work a lot more like, you know, quote unquote, regular people now. I didn't take the mood stabilizer, so I'm still getting some mania now and again, which, you know, my doctor heavily advised me against. And I said, this is how I'm going to do this. So I'm just on the antidepressant. And it's working for me. But it's also taught me a lot of things. And it reminded me, you're not done. There's no done learning. You haven't figured it all out. Mm-hmm. You're still figuring it out.
There's no, like, end goal, really. I mean, there's goals and there's dreams and there's desires, but there's no, like, okay, I've learned this. I'm a complete human now.
Yeah.
You're growing until the day that you die.
Yeah.
You know, you really are. And there's always something new to learn and a new way to change and a new way to live and experience and think. And I am very sad for people who are just so set in their ways that they're so stubborn that they don't want to accept a different way of looking at something or a new concept. And I find that a lot of my family is that way.
Yeah,
and I strive to not be that way.
Yeah.
I want to constantly be open because I am a stubborn person in some sense, but I'm also open to learning and growing and gaining a different perspective because there's always something else out there that's new to you, but, you know, helps you grow in a sense.
Yeah.
And is better than how you're looking at things to begin with.
Well, I mean, it sounds like you're on the right track as far as putting yourself together and being able to manage things as a human being. And it sounds like you've at least found a way to coexist, you know, with with your dark passenger, you know, the depression as it goes along with you on your little journey, you know, forward.
And, you know, I've learned to love it. It's weird, but I'm almost thankful that I have that I live with depression, because if it weren't for that, I wouldn't have a reason to write music.
Mm-hmm.
It's what fuels my art. And I'm so, so in love with the darkness and the depression, just that cloud, because it's what creates my music. And I wouldn't be able to live without that.
Well, and it's like you've got another color on your palette that other people may not have. And that's kind of what it is. Like, you're able to see something that maybe other people can't see. And when you create art with it, you're showing that color to the rest of the world. And that's valuable.
I want to show it, and I really care about making music and putting it out there and performing, because I know that there are so many people that live with depression and anxiety and things that I have experienced, that I want to be a voice for those people who don't have a platform to speak on, and just show them that, you know, like, it's okay. It's fine. Like, you're not making a mistake by having a mental illness.
Yeah.
It's just a part of who you are, and that's absolutely okay. You know, use it for something. Do something good with this weird thing that you're just kind of forced to live with. Because it sucks sometimes. It really does. It makes life very difficult sometimes, but it creates some of the best art that exists in the world. It really does.
Well, thanks for talking to me.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
And there you have it. Channeling chaos into art. That is what Sharone does best. And if you want to see that happen live, and I know that you do, right here in Denver, Colorado, you can go to Cheers, June 22nd. But if you're not in Denver, Colorado, and you're of the more easterly persuasion, you can go to the Summer Rapture Tour. That's right, New York, Boston, Delaware. Sharone is coming to your town. So if you want to find out more, go to facebook.com/
Sharon.official. I'll have a link in the feed below. And as for me, I'll be back again next week, and I got some really cool stuff brewing for the one-year anniversary. But until then, don't kill yourselves out there.